Welcome to season four of the Raise Your Game Show, a podcast that unpacks and dissects the strategies and principles of high performance in sports and business. I'm your host, Alan Stein Jr.
Let's do it.
In this season, I unpack the key stories and lessons from my book, Raise Your Game. High performance secrets from the best of the best. If you've already read or listened to my book, please enjoy the reinforcement and reminders. Remember, repetition is not punishment. If this is all new to you, I hope you find this content helpful. You can order the full audiobook at audible.com or wherever audiobooks are sold. You can also order the paperback or hard copy version for you or your entire team or organization at raiseyourgamebook.com. Before I dive in, I wanted to announce that Your Game Plan, Student Athlete Edition, is coming soon. This online course was strategically designed by me to help middle school, high school, and college athletes improve their leadership, communication, and habits, as well as become the best version of themselves on and off the court or field. Here are a few samples of the lessons taught. I've got dozens and dozens of favorite quotes, but if I had to pick one, it would be, are the habits you have today on par for the dreams you have for tomorrow? And I actually said that in kind of an impromptu talk one time at a basketball camp, and it's now hanging in the training facility of Penn State's football team, which is really a cool and neat honor. So the quote's gotten a little bit of recognition. But the most important part of that quote is, you have to have alignment between what you do every single day and what your goals and dreams are. The first thing you need to do is take a deep breath and realize that no matter what this adversity is, at some point it will pass. And I know that's easy to say and not very easy to do, but I'm hoping what it does is reframe your perspective and give you a little bit of optimism. Now, clearly, there's a wide range of adversities for student athletes. This could be something on the smaller acute level. You know, you get a D on a history test that you really studied hard for. It could be something, you know, a little bit higher stakes. You know, you sprained your ankle in practice and you may have to miss Friday's game. And it could be anything in between. But whatever the adversity is, first and foremost, you have to realize that you do have the strength to get past it, that it will eventually pass, and hopefully that optimism and a sense of poise can lead to some of the other steps. And make sure you follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Alan Stein Jr., or keep listening to the rest of this season for more info. In today's episode, we explore Chapter 2 from the player section, which focuses on passion.
No balls, no babies. Mark Cuban. If you have the love for something, then all the work that follows is easier. In fact, work wouldn't even be the right word. If you want to consider work a grind, a word I hate, then it will remain so. Sure, there are things we all have to grind out, and no one loves every aspect of his job. But if your heart and soul are not in it, if you're not committed to the larger goal and purpose, then find something else to do. Get out of there. You're no good to anyone. You don't have to love the hard work, NBA trainer Tim Grover wrote. You just have to crave the end result so intensely that the hard work is irrelevant. It comes down to heart, or what some people call passion. Now, I'm not naive. I know work is work. I'm an up early, dominate the day, satisfyingly wiped out at night kind of guy. But viewing work as a grind will not just make you miserable. It'll lead to poor performance. An effective mind shift that I use is turning a have to into a get to. I don't have to go to work. I get to. I don't have to call this client. I get to. I don't have to write this chapter. I get to. Putting in work is a privilege. If you instill your work with passion, with all of yourself, the necessary hustle will naturally follow. You'll have a built-in motivator, an automatic engine to power through. Think of your passion as energy you carry around. Energy that hasn't been used yet. Energy just waiting to be fed into something. It's up to you to find what that is. Lately, the word you hear a lot is grit, which I think of as putting your passion to use. Talent alone will never be enough because it's not rare. Innate skill is overrated and it rarely gets the job done. What you put behind that talent, that's where the difference comes in. Amplifying yourself. Passion is the engine that carries you through the hard times, through the early years, through the days where you have no idea if things are going to work out. The passion, in many ways, will be the first thing to come. It'll let you know what you should be pursuing in your life. It's up to you to listen. And that's when it's up to you to act. With apologies to a certain beer company, Jesse Itzler is arguably the world's most interesting man. He's an NBA team co-owner, serial entrepreneur, philanthropist, and endurance warrior who has written books about training with a Navy SEAL and living with Tibetan monks. I'd wanted to meet him for almost a decade and was fortunate enough to be invited to speak at a retreat that he and his wife, Spanx founder Sarah Blakely, held at one of their homes in Connecticut. It was an incredible weekend, part inspirational, part business, part human connection, part fantasy camp. As financially set as the two of them are, Jesse and Sarah are the most humble, generous, and authentic people you will ever meet. They both have unwavering self-belief and confidence in themselves. They bet on themselves big time when no one else did, and it paid off. Money just amplifies who you are, they both like to say. If you're an a-hole, money makes you a giant a-hole. If you're a generous person, then money allows you to do more good in the world. And that's apparent in how they live their lives. Their Live Life for a Living retreat was one of the most transformational experiences I have ever had. It was about the basics of old-school connection. People actually kept their phones buried for the entire weekend. Jesse isn't afraid to be vulnerable and put himself out there. He preaches how self-doubt is the number one success killer and how you can either sit around and wait for an opportunity or you can create one yourself. His daily mantra? I didn't come this far to only come this far. Jesse started as a music artist. He recorded his first rap demo on his answering machine, playing an instrumental beat on a boombox and rapping the lyrics into a mini cassette tape. The only window of studio time he could get was from midnight to 7 a.m. So for months, he rode his bike 20 miles a day to spend all night in the recording studio, only to ride it back in the morning to his job as a kiddie pool attendant. In 1993, he rocketed to fame after writing Go New York Go, which became the infectious New York Knicks theme song at Madison Square Garden. After a successful music career, he moved into entrepreneurship, founding Marquee Jet, a private plane credit card service, before selling it to Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. Then he partnered in Zico Coconut Water before selling it to Coca-Cola. Suffice to say, he never has to worry about money ever again. But nothing's changed because Jesse was never motivated by money. As he wrote in Living with a SEAL, 31 Days of Training with the Toughest Man on the Planet, any success I've had in my life usually occurred when I was not chasing the money, but doing things out of passion. And I believe it. I know Jesse, and he is an inspiration to me and my work. He puts passion into everything he does and applies it to giving back to the world. We spend far too much time at work for it not to have meaning. Satya Nadella, Microsoft CEO. Staying on it. Do you give yourself to what you do? All of yourself? In what ways are you holding back? Why? Could it be the reason why you're not where you want to be? My friend John Gordon, author of many best-selling books on leadership and sports, business, and life, shared this fantastic word with me, meriaki. It's a Greek word that means putting yourself in what you do. I wish we had a word in English for that, but we don't. I fear that the reason we don't is that our culture puts less value in the idea. Superstar trainer Tim Grover, who has worked with everyone from Michael Jordan to Kobe Bryant, told an amazing story about Charles Barkley in his book, Relentless. There was a period during Barkley's playing days when he was having rehab on his knee and was given strict instructions not to go on the court. Of course, Barkley didn't get to where he was by following the rules, so he got on Grover, insisting and insisting until Grover did what most of us would do. He gave in. Grover said Barkley could practice shooting as long as he didn't step down on the injured leg, which was still in a boot. No problem, Barkley said, and Grover handed him a ball. Grover then watched in awe as Barkley, with his booted foot never touching the ground, stood under the basket and dunked 10 times in a row on his good foot. On one foot from a standing jump. That's how much passion he had to get back on the court. Talent alone is a part of the equation, sure. But if it's not activated, it'll just sit there. Unused, untapped, and ultimately unknown. As two-time NBA MVP Steve Nash has said about resilience, that's a muscle that needs to be developed. You can be born with great grit and resilience, but you have to continue to develop that muscle as well. I can't teach you how to have passion. No one can. All I can advise is to find what brings it out in you and then channel the hell out of it. And don't let up. Some call it resolve or perseverance or persistence. Whatever we call it, we know it when we see it. It's Barkley dunking on one foot. It's Kobe coming back from a nearly career-ending injury. It's a 15-year-old Michael Jordan working his tail off to make his high school varsity team after getting cut the previous year. It's a 32-year-old Jordan coming back after retirement to win another 3 championships in a row. It's about putting a realistic goal in front of you and stretching to accomplish it. What is it for you? From the bottom. Starting out, Mark Cuban didn't have anything handed to him. He began selling everything from garbage bags to powdered milk to franchises for a TV repair shop. Cuban then made his way to a job at a software store, opening up in the morning and sweeping the floors at night. Even at that early stage, Cuban had the perspective not to see any work as a drag, but rather as an opportunity. He didn't waste it. On his own time, he read all the computer manuals lying around until he knew how every machine worked. In every job, I would justify it in my mind, he wrote in his book, How to Win at the Sport of Business, whether I loved it or hated it, that I was getting paid to learn and every experience would be of value when I figured out what I wanted to do. As a young man, Cuban had the passion to succeed. It allowed him to translate the grind, or the boredom, or whatever you want to call it, into opportunities. Not everyone sees those so-called dead-end jobs as openings, but Cuban did. I don't believe there's such a thing as a dead-end job. Create the opening yourself by making sure it leads somewhere. Cuban did, and he ended up a billionaire and an icon. Jason Stein, no relation, CEO of media agencies Laundry Service and Cycle Media, started out in a similar way. He responded to 200 Craigslist media jobs a day in order to land just one. Phil Knight began Nike by driving around selling sneakers at track meets out of the trunk of his car. The first investor to say yes to Whole Foods founder John Mackey regarding his idea of opening a natural food market in Texas was not moved by his idea. He was moved by Mackey's enthusiasm. In the 1990s, Google's co-founders, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, were committed to creating the world's best search engine, and they could figure out the money stuff later. None of these people were driven by money. They couldn't be. The money was so far off and nowhere near a sure thing. But so many of their imitators failed, and continue to fail, because they pursue the money as its own end, rather than giving their passion the keys and letting it take them from there. Why would someone spend the countless hours it takes to get good at something? What keeps them there and keeps them coming back for more? Only passion. Late nights in the film room. Success is built on the backs of long hours, solitary commitment, and sometimes what appears to be menial work. No one starts out with the flashy job. The only people who end up landing those jobs are those who are willing to do all of the unflashy things that build toward it. Bill Belichick, who has a record 7 Super Bowl rings, 5 rings as the Patriots head coach, and 2 from his time as the New York Giants defensive coordinator, was not a coaching prodigy. Despite his stellar reputation as among the most knowledgeable NFL coaches ever to put on a headset, he was, and remains to this day, a workhorse. He rose through the coaching ranks by becoming an expert at a skill that no one else had mastered, the one that everyone else hated, watching film. When Belichick started out as a 23-year-old assistant on the Baltimore Colts coaching staff, he offered to watch and analyze film for free. He was paid only $25 a week for his regular duties. Of course, it was a lot of extra hours, some of it eye-watering and mind-numbing, and he never got credit for any insight that was used on the field. That was for his superiors. But that didn't matter. Let's stop and go over that again. He took the worst job for no pay and got no credit for it, and he asked to do it. Belichick thrived on what was considered grunt work, Ryan Holiday explained in Ego is the Enemy. He strove to become the best at precisely what others thought they were too good for.
Once Belichick established himself as not just an expert at breaking down film, but someone who wanted to win badly enough that he would become an expert at breaking down film, other coaching staffs took notice.
The rest is literally history. Other big-time coaches began as video guys, doing the grunt work to make themselves indispensable. Among those were Eric Spoelstra of the Miami Heat, who spent countless hours breaking down film early in his career until years later he looked up and he was calling plays for LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. Holiday simplifies the Belichick and Spoelstra approach this way: find what nobody else wants to do and do it. Jeff Van Gundy is the epitome of passion. As the New York Knicks head coach in the early 1990s, I loved watching him screaming his head off, never sitting down, just locked into the game in a way that his players must have loved. I particularly remember him backing up his players in high-tension situations, getting head-butted by Marcus Camby after Camby took a swing at one of his players, and grabbing for dear life onto 7-foot Alonzo Mourning's foot during a Knicks scuffle. YouTube these. Trust me. Van Gundy is a huge advocate of the get-on-the-ground, scrappy player who doesn't care what his stat line looks like. As a coach, he did what he could from the sidelines to practice what he preached. Nowadays, Van Gundy is an NBA broadcaster who also gives smart and inspirational talks to players and coaches alike. "Want to be an uncommon player?" he asked at one of his talks. "Box out. Take charges. Dive for loose balls. Make the extra pass. Those are all things everyone can do, yet very few actually do." I've met him a few times and interviewed him for my podcast. He is an engaging and knowledgeable coach who has a powerful way of cutting right to the heart of the matter. When I asked him, as a coach, whether experience or instinct was more important, he told me he saw them as two sides of the same coin. "Experience gives you instinct," he told me on my podcast, "if you pay attention. It's not the accumulation of your years or games, or even victories alone that matters. It's what you do with them." Here's a self-test. Stop for a moment and think about your job. There's what you're assigned to do, but there are other things that need to be done, right? Are there skills or knowledge that'd be invaluable if they existed inside one employee? Of course there are. If you don't know what those are, find out. Once you do, become the master of them. Make it so no one can do what you do. Create your own opportunities. It's up to you to be ready for the moment. Your opportunities may be few and far between. You may not know when they're coming, so it's best to always be prepared. In 1990, Tim Grover was a young trainer with a master's degree working at a health club in Chicago. One morning, he read an article in the newspaper about how Michael Jordan was tired of getting roughed up by the bad boy Detroit Pistons, who were consistently eliminating the Bulls in the playoffs. Grover's eyes lit up. He saw his opening. Though Jordan was by then already the NBA's best and most visible player, Grover was not intimidated. He took the ball and drove towards the hole. After some hustle and a good dose of fearlessness, he secured a meeting with the Bulls' doctor and trainer. What were the chances they would advise their superstar player to work with this unknown trainer who had never trained a professional athlete, he wrote? "None," everyone said. "Forget it. Impossible." But it wasn't. In fact, that's exactly what happened. Jordan and the Bulls hired Grover, who stayed with Jordan for the rest of his career. Once Grover worked with, and succeeded with, Jordan, Grover became a known quantity and rose to the top of his profession. He is now a legend, and it all goes back to a single decision. That day in the health club, Grover didn't spend time going over all the reasons it wasn't going to happen, why Michael Jordan and the Bulls wouldn't hire someone like him. He made it happen. Those opportunities are not as frequent as we'd like them to be, and they almost never appear in the way we imagine they would, but none of that matters. Find the door, open the door, step through the door. when they call your number. Passion is necessary to get you through time periods when the opportunities just aren't there. It's what drives you to be ready when the time comes, and you never know when that will happen. It's funny how few people remember who Tom Brady used to be. Brady was an unknown sixth-round draft pick, a backup quarterback, watching New England Patriots games from the sidelines. One Sunday in 2001, Patriots franchise quarterback Drew Bledsoe went down with a devastating injury, and Brady got the call. He put on his helmet and ran onto the field. 17 years later, Brady is still at it, and few would argue that he isn't among the greatest ever in his job. When the moment presented itself, he was ready. Of course, he couldn't wait until Bledsoe went down to prepare himself, or else he wouldn't have been able to capitalize on it when it did. He got himself ready and trusted that his moment would come. Brady's moment has lasted almost 20 years. His career will go down as one of the most impressive longevity stories in the history of professional sports. He is currently 41 years old and talks about playing another 5 years, an impossible feat for a football player, much less a quarterback, to achieve. How has he done it? Passion for the game, of course. But not just that. He hasn't forgotten that lesson from that Sunday in 2001. He's getting himself ready because he cares enough to do it. Becoming a trailblazer in the areas of health and wellness. Outside of playing football, Tom Brady told an interviewer, "The one thing I love to do is prepare for it." He's actually passionate about the preparation. Think about how hard it is to beat someone like that, whose passion extends to the most grueling part of the work. We'll return to this idea in the next chapter when I talk about meeting Kobe Bryant. Competition is good for your health. Passion is indeed an inner drive, but it can also be brought out through external factors. One of the most effective ways to bring out passion is through competition, to tap into our desire to win. The root of the word competition, in Latin, is to strive, and in that striving, we get better. It's why great teams compete with each other every day. The starters compete to keep their jobs, and the reserves and role players compete to take their jobs. A healthy competition is good for the workplace, just like it is on the court. At DeMatha, Coach Jones ends every practice with inter-team competitions in order to tap into that competitive instinct. Competition is a powerful and intense energy source that should be utilized as a force for good. Psychologist Adam Galinsky and business professor Mari Schweitzer wrote in Friend and Foe about the value of competitiveness in work and life. Setting us up in a head-to-head matchup in a situation that we may lose is constructive because disappointment can be turned into motivation. When we feel the loss, we internalize the need to get better. We are driven to return stronger and to get a win. This is why so many workplaces now look to sports to teach everything from motivation to teamwork to discipline. The court is like a testing lab for what works and what doesn't. For instance, statistics show that basketball teams that are down by one at halftime win more often than teams that are up by one. It seems strange until we think about it, but then it makes perfect sense. The team that is down by one has that extra motivation that comes from being down, which fires them up. Think about being in a race. Would you rather be slightly ahead or slightly behind? The runner who is slightly behind has a visual of where he needs to get to and the tangible motivation to get there, while the runner slightly ahead does not. A wide open track in front of you may be exciting, but it's not the motivator that another runner's back can be. There's a reason why kids play games, not just practice, when they start a sport. Long before they know what they're doing, they enjoy the boost, the energy, and the passion that comes from competition. The main reason sports are central to the youth experience is because of the intangibles that arise out of practicing, competing, and being on a team. Teaching children the importance of competing is why I don't let my kids win at anything. No, I'm not an egomaniac. I do this to teach them about life. By definition, it's not an accomplishment unless it's earned. I want my kids to earn everything in their lives. In games of skill, strength, or speed, where I clearly have a formidable advantage, I will often handicap the rules, you know, give them a significant head start in a race, to give them better odds. However, I still do my best to beat them. When they do win, I congratulate them and tell them how proud I am of their effort. I intentionally recognize how hard they worked, how much they practice, and how they never quit. It's important to acknowledge the process, not the outcome. I don't make a big deal when they win or lose, but rather highlight the role their effort and attitude play. And regardless of the outcome, I make sure that whoever wins does so with humility and graciousness, and whoever loses does so with class and grace. Obstacles. Passion goes hand in hand with courage, whether on a large or small scale. Maybe the most amazing personification of courage I've ever heard of is Aaron Ralston. Ralston has since become an icon and well-known adventurer since a movie was made about his life. But on April 26, 2003, he was just alone and screwed. While hiking by himself in Utah, Ralston stepped on a boulder that jarred loose and landed right on top of his arm, pinning it and him to the side of a canyon wall. For 6 days, Ralston was stuck there in a standing position, his arm trapped, with little food or water or chance of being rescued, drinking his own piss and freezing. But he refused to relent. Of course, what people talk about now was Ralston's decision on day 6 to break and then cut off his own arm. But remember, he had to make it to that point. He spent 126 hours under circumstances none of us can imagine before figuring out not just how to do that, but bringing himself to a point where he mentally could do that. He spent the last hour doing what almost none of us could imagine ourselves doing. Today, Ralston, prosthetic arm and all, still continues to climb and has become a motivational speaker. It's nearly impossible to complain about your circumstance after listening to this guy's story. Fortunately, none of us has to face Ralston's horrifying situation, but his story is an inspiration wrapped inside a lesson. In The Obstacle is the Way, Ryan Holiday looked at the great achievers of history from all arenas and found that they all shared one characteristic: pushback. Like oxygen to a fire, he wrote, obstacles become fuel for the blaze that was their ambition. Every impediment serves to make the inferno within them burn with great ferocity. The truly ambitious, the passionate ones who rise to the top of their fields, feed on the obstacles. They don't see them as things to avoid. Those are rich energy sources. Remember that the only difference between seeing something as a problem or an opportunity is your attitude. Here are 4 keys to overcoming adversity. Number 1, stay honest. Number 2, stay positive. Number 3, stay insulated. Number 4, stay confident. Here's a self-test. Think about the current obstacles in your work and life. Write down your 3 primary obstacles, which is a helpful way to see them for what they are. In what ways can they be motivators? How can you turn them into fuel? When you stop growing, you start to decay. Mike Krzyzewski. Your comfort zone is a cage. As human beings, it's wired in our DNA to crave comfort, to subconsciously make things as easy as possible. But that's not how we grow. We grow through discomfort. We grow through stretching, through challenge, through adversity. Low performers crave comfort. High performers don't just tolerate or do well in discomfort, they seek it out. They keep raising the degree of difficulty so they're forced to strive and stretch and improve. The discomfort isn't where they stop, it's where they start. Passion allows you to drive through the type of discomfort that would cause most people to quit. That's why you must condition yourself to be comfortable being uncomfortable. How many times have you heard that you need to work hard to be successful? Probably more than you can count. But no one really defines what hard work is or what it means to work hard. Here is my personal definition. Hard work is intentionally leaving your comfort zone with purpose. That's how you grow. If I asked you to press pause and stop listening to this book and start doing push-ups right now, what would you do when it got tough? You'd stop, right? Once your chest and shoulders and arms were on fire and shaking, you'd stop. That just seems natural. But what if I told you that it's the reps after that point which actually make the difference? Those are the ones that make you stronger. In the spring of 2018, a trend started happening online with professional gymnasts. They were all posting videos of themselves which were going viral. Gold medal routines? No. Personal highlight reels? Hardly. They were all posting their most epic fails, falls, and crashes. It happened after an Italian gymnast posted her own and started the hashtag GymnasticsFallChallenge, and it took off with over 1,000 professional gymnasts posting their own. Why? Because these professionals understood that they were only publicized for doing well. Maybe that selective editing gave the wrong impression about how hard they worked and how difficult their events were. The public lapped up the videos. True, we all have the juvenile impulse to laugh when some people wipe out, but we also like to see that these professionals are human. The videos illuminated that they are people who have worked their tails off, building their failures into something else. The failures weren't sidetracks. They were the stepping stones to their success. The same is true in business. It's only after the no's, the letdowns, the misfires, the doubts, and the resistance that the best ideas surface. Failure is learning. Billionaire investor Warren Buffett is a big proponent of studying failures because he knows that those stories are where the gold lies. He doesn't just preach it either. He has made it a habit for years to write down the reasons why he is making an investment decision and later look back to see what went right or wrong. It's not coincidence that adversity is a key part of so many success stories. From Oprah to Steve Jobs to Tony Robbins, it's rare that you find someone who achieved greatness who didn't face huge adversity. Those obstacles got turned inside out. Happiness can be defined, in part at least, as the fruit of the desire and ability to sacrifice what we want now for what we want eventually. Stephen Covey. Common denominators. Be open to failure. Invite failure. As long as you're failing differently each time, in the long run, you're actually not failing at all. The most successful people I've come across, from players to coaches to entrepreneurs to CEOs, do not fear failure. They trust the process and do not worry about the outcome. This goes for virtually all the success stories we see on the news or read about, including in this book. According to former PayPal executive, VP, and LinkedIn co-founder Reid Hoffman, whose first digital venture flamed out, if you tune it out so that you have zero chance of failure, you usually have zero chance for success. As someone already worth over $3 billion, Hoffman is still a proponent of failure. Failure, especially tough losses, is beneficial because you learn to keep a certain amount of humility and learn to keep a certain amount of objectivity. That doesn't mean that they're easy. It just means there's something worthy at the other end. This goes for companies and it goes for individuals. Is it a grind or is it a journey? That's up to you. When Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay became the first men in history to summit Mount Everest, they celebrated. They took it all in for 15 minutes. Then they climbed back down. Stop seeking out your comfort zone, consciously or unconsciously. It's your enemy. It makes you soft and complacent. You have to consistently step out of your comfort zone and challenge yourself. When Bill Gates was starting Microsoft, he always promised more than he could deliver. He just said yes, and then he'd figure out how to do it afterwards. Steve Smith, his marketing director, said, "Virtually everything we sold was not a product when we sold it. We sold promises." Follow that. Sell promises. You'll be amazed at what you can pull off when it's time to produce. There is no reward for always playing it safe. The most successful people in any industry thrive in discomfort. Why? Because temporary discomfort leads to permanent improvement. No one will hand you anything. You have to earn and deserve success. You have to have the courage to sacrifice your immediate contentment. Embrace the process required because you want it badly enough. Dig into your passion and let it be your guide. Key point. Passion is the engine that powers us through what we have to do. If you know what yours is, tap into it as much as you can. If you don't, commit yourself to searching and finding it. Remember, passion is what will separate you from others and your life's work from anyone else's. No one makes it by coasting on talent. Skill alone rarely gets the job done. Your attitude and approach determine whether it's a grind or a journey. Care about the results so much that you're willing to do what it takes to get there. Use your passion as a guide to do what you should be doing.
Well, that's it for me. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure to join my conversations at Alan Stein Jr. on all major social platforms and go to allensteinjr.com to subscribe to my full timeout, 30-second timeout, and overtime monthly emails. I look forward to helping you raise your game.